We good? Hi, welcome to ALPR and a very screechy microphone. We're going to talk today about automated license plate readers and other forms of street-level surveillance. My name is Dave Moss. I am an investigative researcher at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. If you're unfamiliar with our organization, we are based in San Francisco, and we work on civil liberties issues such as free speech and privacy, innovation in the ever-increasing digital world. But we also work on issues in the real world, such as when technology is used to surveil people on a massive scale. I'd just like to start with some brief introductions, and then we can talk. We each have various things that we want to bring to the table to talk about, and then we can start taking some questions. Start over here.
Hi, my name is Blair Gentella. I'm an attorney. I practice here in the Atlanta area, and I'm a general practitioner, but I also have a lot of experience in technological issues and surveillance as well.
Hi, everybody. My name is Nadia Kayali, and I'm an activist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, along with Dave. I work on surveillance, not only at the federal level, so we've heard a lot about NSA spying, but also at the more local level. And I helped launch our new project, Street Level Surveillance, which I'm going to be talking about.
Hello, my name is John Padfield. I'm a member of the smallest minority in the United States. I'm somebody who has actually served in public office, and I understand technology. I've served two terms in the Indiana House of Representatives, and I have a PhD in technology leadership and innovation from Purdue University. I'm here just representing myself today, but when we get into the discussions, there's several things I want to bring up related to laws that have been passed or laws that have been attempted in various states to try and regulate the use of automatic plate readers.
So who here, can I just get a show of hands of who's familiar with what automated license plate readers are? Wow, that's incredible. Awesome. Well, for the few of you who aren't, I'll sort of go over the basics. Police around the country have started purchasing camera systems that are designed to recognize license plates and record license plates. Typically, there are two types of cameras, ones that are mounted in stationary positions, like on streetlights, on traffic lights, on telephone poles. And then the other kind are cameras that are attached to vehicles, usually police patrol cars, or maybe they might have a special van that they use. And they both collect data in different ways. The ones that are stationary collect everybody who's passed through that point. The ones that are attached to cars allow a police officer to go around certain neighborhoods or certain locations and collect information on people in those neighborhoods. They also have another function where the police agencies will create what are called hot lists. These are lists of cars that maybe are stolen or maybe suspected of being involved in a crime. But that they can be any number of things. Like, for example, the Los Angeles Police Department has lists of suspected cars that they believe might have been involved in gang activities. And without any necessary suspicion of crime, they just believe they've been in gang neighborhoods. Then, as police are driving around the city and they get a ping because they've hit a car that, you know, maybe it has an outstanding warrant or maybe it's stolen, then they find a reason to pull that person over, just follow them around until they make a traffic error and then pull them over, and then that's when the police stop begins. For us, there are a lot of concerns with this technology, particularly when police are capturing this information and storing it in aggregate. You know, if they were only having it collect no information and they were just recognizing plates that were stolen cars, that would be a relatively low invasion of privacy. When you have a law enforcement agency that collects that kind of locational detail over, say, 5 years or indefinitely, then you start to be able to build up the comings and goings and travel patterns of individual people over a historical period of time. There are also private companies that are aggressively marketing this to law enforcement agencies, as well as having their own systems where they're either collecting license plates themselves or they're aggregating everybody else's into a giant database that may, you know, go however many years. and then licensing this database to law enforcement agencies or to repo or insurance companies or, you know, anybody that actually wants to pay them for it. For us as an organization, it's you know, quite concerning that your locational information would be collected by an agency. It's a form of mass surveillance. We're suing in Los Angeles to get access to records related to this. The argument that the LAPD and the LA Sheriff's Department is using is that they don't have to give us records because it's all part of an active investigation. And when you ask them, well, who's being under investigation? It's everybody. It's everybody. And that's the way people see it, and that's a mass surveillance technology, and that, you know, is a great concern. So that's kind of a background on it. As far as organizations work is goes with this, we have our lawsuits. Recently we were able to obtain the raw ALPR data for the city of Oakland for a period of a week, and we were able to map it out and see how they actually went basically block by block through the entire city collecting everybody's license plates from parked vehicles. And, you know, we have a few other things coming up that I can't talk about quite yet. But, you know, from there, I'll sort of jump on to the next talker.
Well, I think Dave is going to raise a lot of good points. One thing that I kind of wanted to mention also was the use of drones, which is another just example of this sort of surveillance mindset. Some jurisdictions are starting to use drones. There's been evidence that drones are being used. And it's basically gathering the same type of information, but just on a larger scale. So I see that as becoming a big issue. And there's been some legislation tailored to address this issue and the civil rights issues. But the cases so far really don't, you know, they say that you don't have a constitutional right not to have a drone spy on you from above, unless you're in some sort of protected area or something like that. So it's sort of along the same lines. I mean, there's a lot of new technologies out there. There's stories coming out about automatic license plate readers being put on garbage trucks just as they do their normal routes. I mean, that's a really kind of a clever way to just map out the license plates and try to find cars. But, you know, also that's getting a lot of people's information and collecting it. And what do you do with it after that point as well? So there's been stories about street lamps. I think Dave is going to talk about that. In biometrics in general, Dave was going to mention that as well. But newer technologies, even technologies such as gait analysis, I recently read an article where they can identify someone on how they walk. And there are huge conventions out there where all these little clever technologies are being sold and to governments, our government, local state, local governments, other countries, and really there needs to be more scrutiny, I think, on the civil rights impact of some of this stuff. So
I just want to mention a couple things and expand on a few things that Dave said, just in reference to our automated license plate reader case. So one of the things about these technologies is that they really create a public records, what I call a public records catch-22. On the one hand, if you can't get the public records, you know, if you and really anybody can get public records and can do a Public Records Act request. You don't have to be a lawyer. Sometimes you have to figure out how to argue to get them when they're denied, but you do not have to be a lawyer. So we really encourage people to do Public Records Act requests. So on the one hand, you want to do those because you want to know what the heck's going on. How is your law enforcement agency using these technologies? On the other hand, when you get the data itself is pretty privacy invasive. Specifically, so in Oakland, we don't work at the DMV, so we can't look up every license plate number, but we got just these lists. Particularly in Oakland, if you look at the map of where automated license plate readers are being used, we made a heat map that showed where they were being used the most. And where they were being used the most are in communities, communities of color, communities that are very rapidly gentrifying. This is, if you know anything about the Bay Area, is something that's happening. Lots of folks are having to move from particular neighborhoods because people with lots of money want to live there. So this is where we saw the greatest concentration of ALPR use. And this is not the only situation. situation in which we have seen these technologies or techniques being used to target people of color, to target people who are politically active, in ways that are very much, we think, very constitutionally concerning. So I just wanted to mention a couple of other technologies, mention why we think these technologies are spreading so quickly, and then pass it on to John. So a couple of the other technologies that I think are really good to know about, in addition to automated license plate readers and biometrics, Blair touched a little bit on some of the biometrics, and there's a huge list if you want to know more. Check out Street Level Surveillance Project. Of course, stingrays have been a lot in the news recently, also known as IMSI catchers. So these are fake cell phone towers that trick your phone into connecting with them and provide locational data on everybody in a pretty wide radius. They also do have the technical capability to capture contents of SMS messages, although we've been told they're not doing that. I don't know about you guys. I don't know how much I believe what law enforcement is telling me about how they're using these technologies. A couple of other things that we're seeing a lot are systems that basically take different feeds from around a city. So take traffic cameras, the emergency notification system, ShotSpotter, which are these little microphones that are supposed to activate when a gun is fired and help you figure out where it happened and alert police, which have a 7% accuracy rate, by the way. So they take all these different feeds and put them into one easily accessible place. So it makes it much easier for one or two or three people in a police department to monitor what's going on in a whole city. The other thing that we continue to see being used around the country is these fusion centers. So fusion centers are state and local information clearinghouses. They're collaborations between local law enforcement, state law enforcement, and the federal government, and they give people like local law enforcement the ability to access the FBI's eGuardian database. So this is pretty concerning. It is, you sort of think like, the NSA is doing this surveillance, local cops doing this surveillance, they're not going to connect the dots. And that's actually very inaccurate. They are going to connect the dots. That is a lot of what law enforcement has been doing in the last couple of years. So I just want to touch briefly on the money. So you may be quite unsurprised to hear that some of these companies are lobbying very, very, very hard to get these technologies adopted. In fact, there is a Congressional Drone Caucus. I kid you not. They're not quiet about it. They have a web page. So obviously, lawmakers are being very influenced by drone makers. It is an industry. There is money to be made. How much of it everyday folks are actually seeing is another question. But there's absolutely lobbying coming from these companies. Vigilant Solutions, which is one of the foremost manufacturers of license plate readers, does lobbying not just at the federal level, but at the state level even. I even was at a city council meeting where they were talking about adopting automated license plate readers, and there was somebody from Vigilant Solutions there, which is bizarre. It's a city council meeting. But there is a lot of money. So there's a lot of money in lobbying, but there's also a lot of money coming from the federal government to state and local law enforcement to purchase these technologies. And what happens is that law enforcement applies for grants, and then they get the grants, and usually they'll be on some sort of consent calendar at a city council meeting, meaning the city council doesn't have a discussion. Suddenly law enforcement, 3 months from now, they have a drone, and people go, well, how did that happen? It happened because city council is not paying attention and because there's lots of free money. So what are people doing about this? That's the question.
Well, I'll pick up right there. The pace of technology is vastly outpacing legislative efforts to try and control it. There's a study done just a couple of years ago, and I've been doing some research trying to find out what the current state is on policy related to the use of this technology. The study was done a couple of years ago by the International Chiefs of Police. They were very pro-ALRP. Their study was a nationwide study. They contacted 444 randomly selected law enforcement agencies. They asked them, are you using ALRP? And if so, there were some additional questions. Now, this was a couple of years ago. About one quarter of the respondents said, yes, we are using the technology. Another one of the questions that was posed to those that were using the technology, do you have policies in place about how it is to be used? Now, let me just stop right there. We're not talking about state law. We're talking about departmental level policy. Who has access to it? How long are you going to hang on to it? less than half of the departments using it had a policy in place about who has access, how long is it going to be retained, or anything of that nature. So if it's not being done at the department level, and like I said, this is a couple of years old, I can't find good numbers right now about what percent of the police departments are using it, but I know it has grown exponentially. I went out and started doing some studies across National Conference of State Legislatures. It varies all over the board. Maine has the shortest retention period. By state law in Maine, 21 days is the longest law enforcement can hang on to license plate data unless there is an ongoing investigation specific to an individual. They can't bulk warehouse that data for more than 21 days. Utah's 30 days, Colorado is 3 years. Most states do not have a limit on it. There's been a number of bills introduced this year in the 2015 session. Vermont passed a couple of bills that would have put some limits on it. They were vetoed by the governor. Indiana attempted a bill that was going to reduce it to 72 hours, was as long as you could hold on to that data, unless there was specific evidence of a crime and there was a particular person of interest. That never made it to the governor. It failed in the Indiana House. So it's all over the board out there. There is no consistent rule about how long this data can be held on to. There is a very legitimate purpose for this data, but there has to be policies in place about how it's used because it is so open to abuse. And the one other piece, and I'm sure we'll get into this discussion more as we go on, I'm even more concerned about the private companies that are sucking up this data beyond, because at least there's this much regulation about what law enforcement does with it. There is virtually no regulation about what private companies do with it. And when you think about it, you have no choice about having a license plate on your car. If you're going to drive in public, you're going to have a number that's visible to anyone that you pass. And there are companies out there exploiting the fact that you're required by law to have a plate. They're out there sucking up that information, your GPS coordinates, timestamps. They're selling that to the insurance companies. They're selling that to banks. They're selling that to private investigators. They're selling it to anybody that has a wallet. And it's your travel information.
Yeah, thanks for that. Sorry, I had a piece of ice right there. So I did find it interesting. So in terms of legislation, so Louisiana had a bill just a few months ago that made it all the way to the governor that would have made a statewide ALPR system specifically to go after uninsured motorists. So we're not even talking, you know, child abductions anymore. We're talking, you know, just uninsured, plain old uninsured motorists. Now, thankfully, the governor of Louisiana did veto that bill. On the other side of the spectrum, in California, we have a bill right now that would classify ALPR data as personal identifiable information or personal sensitive information. And that means that any company that does collect ALPR would have to treat it like any other sensitive data, like your social security number, your credit card number. And if they had a breach of that, then they would be liable for it. They would also have to put out privacy policies and explain what they're doing with it. And that's a pretty good measure that we've been looking at so far. I don't know if you've seen other, you know, this one is about to go to the governor. It's very, very close. How close have you seen things go?
There's a number of pieces of legislation, and some are very, very well written, others less so. But in a typical legislature, you may have 800 or 1,000 bills introduced. Only a fraction of those are going to get hearings. And so there are some states, when you go out and look at the bills that have been introduced, there's a half dozen bills on the same topic, some very good, some very poor. But it's anyone's guess what's actually going to make it to a committee hearing, what's going to make it to the governor.
So I think in the title of this panel, we were talking about defense against ALPR. And unfortunately, there isn't necessarily a lot that can be done about it as a countermeasure. And we can discuss this a little bit more. I'm most familiar with California, where the law actually says you can't do anything to obstruct your plate for an automatic license plate reader. Like, it's not just you can't obstruct your plate from view from a police officer. It's specifically if you do something to your license plate that interferes with an ALPR camera, you're breaking the law. With one exception, you are able to put a bumper buddy, I think is what it's called. Anybody familiar with these things? So in places where there's a lot of parallel parking, people will put things over the back of their car when they park. So if somebody bumps them, they don't get damage to their bumper. And so you can put one of those on the back of the car as long as a police officer can physically go up to your car and lift it. That is, as far as I know, the only solution out there, and that only protects you from mobile cameras from police who are driving around collecting where everybody's parked. Anybody else have any thoughts about issues other than advocacy?
Well, I would just throw in one thing. I started looking at what type of physical defense a person might have to prevent their plate from being read. And there's certainly a number of legal issues around this, so I'm not encouraging anyone to do it. I do want to caution you about one thing. Most of the mobile cameras have a feature on them. If a police car is going one way and they're watching plates of cars going the opposite direction, if their camera cannot read the number, they can set it so that that flags something on the officer's dash to let him know that I didn't get a good look at that plate. And then it's going to be up to the officer if he wants to turn around to see, was there an intentional obstruction or was it just a bad camera angle? But if the camera detects that there is a plate there, but it can't read it for whatever reason, you've got a novelty plate that interferes, you've put on some type of film that's polarized that tries to interfere, sometimes that could get you pulled over just for having it.
There was a very serious case in San Francisco where a police officer's ALPR reader misread a single digit on somebody's license plate. And that resulted in a woman who was a bus driver, and it was like her day off or she was on her way home, getting pulled over, hauled out of her car, thrown against the dashboard, thrown against the trunk, having shotguns put at her head, an extremely traumatic moment. And only after did they have her pinned down in this situation, did somebody actually look at her plate with human eyes and realize that they had a plate number wrong. And so that went up pretty high in the courts, and she's won that case, which is a good thing.
So the one thing I do want to mention is that there are a number of reflective sprays and coatings that have been advertised specifically to try to avoid automated license plate readers. And unfortunately, Mythbusters tested those out and found at least one of them that they did not work. And I think we mentioned that in we have a frequently asked questions about automated license plate readers on the SLS page, and we link to the study. So as far as I can tell, There's not even solutions that kind of, in California that would not be allowed, even that. But even where it is legal, probably doesn't work. I wouldn't rely on it.
And Nadia had mentioned some pretty interesting stuff about the funding of these systems earlier. And one thing I've looked into is how asset forfeiture money has been used to purchase this equipment, and then that equipment is then used to seize more assets. If you look at the Drug Enforcement Administration's their ALPR program, they specifically say this program is used to seize money. And then they'll use that to buy more license plate readers.
I concur.
I did write down a few things. Actually, can I have your sheet of paper now? No, I've lost it. I did write down a few details about the city of Atlanta that we posted on the EFF blog yesterday. So in the immediate area, the ACLU had determined that the Atlanta Police Department in 2012 spent more than $130,000 on license plate readers. They bought 11 mobile cameras attached to vehicles and one fixed location camera. At this point, we don't have updated numbers. I imagine that it's grown substantially since 2012. And these cameras did come from Vigilant Solutions, or Vigilant Video, which is one of the most aggressive companies with what they claim to be the largest ALPR database. Gwinnett County also started using ALPRs in 2011. They cost about $20,000 a camera. At the time, they only bought one, but again, that single camera was able to capture 11 million plates in a single year. There's also stingrays, as Nadia had mentioned, used in this region. There was some pretty good reporting about this in Gwinnett County, in which the district attorney had basically said, "Yeah, we don't tell defense attorneys when we use this. We just say there was some sort of cell phone location technology." And currently, EFF is doing a public records campaign across the country to find out how local law enforcement agencies are using mobile biometric technology. These are usually cell phone devices or other devices that you use to capture, say, fingerprints, used for facial recognition, iris scans, tattoo recognition, a whole host of things. So a few places in Georgia have responded to us. Let me back up. We're waiting for responses from the Atlanta Police Department, the Auburn Police Department, the Bibb County Sheriff's Office, and the Lawrenceville Police Department. But the Georgia Bureau of Investigation got back to us telling us that they had no records. And we are planning our nice response to them with a whole bunch of records that we found on the internet that apparently they don't seem to know about, showing how in July 2015 they used one of their devices 14,000 times. So that's pretty funny. And then on the subject of fusion centers, the Atlanta Fusion Center is one of the hubs for the Hemisphere program. And what the Hemisphere program is, it's a program in which AT&T places people inside the Fusion Center to access AT&T's huge database of phone records, and they're later reimbursed for their staff time by federal funds passed through the local agency. And so Atlanta is where that is, and or at least one of the three hubs, and so that seems to be going on around here.
If anyone has any questions at any time, yeah, just raise your hand.
I'm ready to open up a question. That was my list of agenda items. Exhausted.
I live in the city of Los Angeles. Would it be possible for me to file some sort of Freedom of Information request to see what they have on my license plate number?
You could file it, and then you could tell us about the rejection letter that you get.
Okay.
Because people have. And that's where we have our lawsuits. In San Diego, I've seen people get from LAPD is the number of times that they've been captured. So if you phrase it, and if they come back to you and they say no, just ask, see if you can ask how many times you've been recorded.
LA, just for the record, is one of the leaders in deploying all of these technologies that we're talking about, and actually goes and teaches other law enforcement agencies how to use them at exercises like Urban Shield. So it's, yeah.
In regards to the Stingray technology that you guys brought up, I may be completely wrong about this, but I could have swore I read this week some kind of legislation that passed in regards to needing a warrant or something and using them.
So this was not legislation. The Department of Justice actually just came out with a memo saying that they would require the FBI to get a warrant. So this doesn't affect the state and local law enforcement agencies that are using it because it's not binding on them, but the DOJ is the is legal counsel for the FBI. So this is a huge victory, and we think it really has to do with the fact that there's been so much negative press and so many people who are upset about it. I don't think they would have just magically changed their opinion on it. So it's a huge victory. This just happened yesterday. So
remember,
very topical.
A year and a half from now, we could have a whole new Department of Justice. So legislation would be
Legislation would definitely be preferable.
I'm curious about, as far as challenges go, like what kind of arguments can you deploy when comes to your physical location on public roads and with your license plate number, that's generally considered public information. It's a requirement in place to acquire that. So as far as legal challenges, what arguments do you make to say that this is different from a cop sitting in his car license plate numbers normally?
The thing I think that the cases or the courts are starting to recognize a lot are the aggregation of it. So like one instance of person, John Smith sitting outside an establishment or something with their car parked there versus collecting that information over a month that shows their patterns. Every Saturday they do this, what church they go to, what negative establishments they go to, or whatever sort of incriminating information or personal, even just simply personal information. That's sort of the civil rights concern of aggregating this data or just any sort of that data that even though it's just you're in the public.
Yeah, there have been a few locations where I think Minneapolis, and it might have been Toronto was the other one, but let's stick with Minneapolis for now. Oh, Boston. Boston was the other one, where this raw data has been made public because under this idea that it is public. And as soon as policymakers see their own data out there, say like the mayor of Boston or a legislator, suddenly, this is a big deal and we need to rein this in.
If I could just throw one more thing on there. A similar argument was made several years ago when it came to stalking laws. If there's a person out there that decides to start following a coworker around, follow her home, follow her to the gym, follow her wherever, well, that's just public. He's sitting in his car on a public street. What's the problem? The legislature's recognized, you know, there's a limit out there where this isn't coincidence and it's actually turning into harassment. So there is precedent out there that laws can be passed saying, you know, it's private up to a point, but there's a threshold over which that it's no longer purely a public matter.
And maybe this is just my like alternative history feeling here, but if we were talking about, you know, we hadn't had license plates for the entire history of the U.S. and somebody was proposing that today, I think we would see a pretty hard backlash because of this technology. When they decided that we were going to put plates that were publicly viewable on a car, nobody thought that one day there would not be police officers, they would be computers grabbing everything and writing everything down.
With the changes to the legislature, how much does that actually change the behavior of the police officers versus just the evidence that's presented in court?
So I think we haven't been seeing enough of this legislation yet to know that. And unfortunately, that's a really good question because unfortunately, a lot of this legislation doesn't actually address evidence. So for those who are not lawyers, when evidence is unlawfully collected by a law enforcement agency and then a defense attorney sees it, they'd use what's called the exclusionary rule to keep it out of court. So some of these pieces of legislation actually specifically address evidence and say evidence that is collected in violation of this shall not be used in a court of law. I don't know, you know, if the result was, I don't know exactly what the result would be if it was collected in violation. And also, unfortunately, officers are very good at constructing reasons why they would have gotten the evidence anyway. And the other point is that we don't know how well the legislation is working if there is not transparency and also if there's not some sort of consequence built in. And that is something that you know, EFF gets asked quite often about specific pieces of state legislation or what would be ideal in a piece of legislation. And one of the things that we always point out is, you know, there has to be some sort of transparency to see if it's actually working. So, you know, there should be annual reports and there should be somebody independent doing them. These are things that really need to be built into the legislation.
So,
up till very recently, my response whenever I get pulled over on the side of the road is not to sign anything, not to agree to anything. And by the time I get into court and maybe go through a few days and maybe charges changed a few times, finally they off, you know, because they're tired of dealing with me. I discovered this DUI thing, and specifically you, Blair, in the state of Georgia, it says that the officer may require you to sign the ticket. Is there anything going on where, are you familiar with the fair DUI placard?
I'm aware of that one.
Okay. I mean, should I still roll down my window and talk to the cop, or is that a better?
Well, there's been
system?
Some. They're actually now. This probably happened about a year ago. They're allowed to like force you to give up your bodily fluids here in Georgia now. So Georgia is very poor as far as protected people's right. Like some states, like my home state of Washington State, it's actually illegal or unconstitutional, I believe, to have DUI checkpoints or any checkpoints for that matter, except for maybe a few limited ones. But as far as implied consent, is that what you're referring to? The card?
Placard that you put on your side window and you hold up your driver's license and it cites the state law, the state statutes that say that I don't have to actually give you my license, I have to show it to you. And, you know, on down the list, please put any citation under the windshield.
The Georgia law basically says they can ask you to get out of the car, even for like minor traffic violations. But there's like a gray area, a line where they have to stop their investigation for the current thing that they pulled you over for. So they can take you out of the car. They could say it's for their own safety, but they have to be actively, basically, writing up the ticket they can't just, you know, sit there and then try and get more incriminating evidence. And that's, again, I mean, that's just one of those things that attorneys would have to argue when you go to court. You know, Your Honor, at this juncture, that should be where that line is drawn. But no, I think if you stay in your car and you do that, you would be violating the law. And you'd probably go to jail more longer, I guess.
There's actually a what to do when you're dealing with the police panel here. I don't know, tomorrow afternoon, but I don't know exactly when. So check out the schedule for here.
I think, Scott, you're changing the batteries out?
Yeah, give it a try.
There's a mic right here, too.
All right, so as far as legislative countermeasures and changing the laws and other things, you know, to stop it on that end, as far as the countermeasures, like, you know, physical things to do to counteract this, now, like, for the California, you know, how they have it to where you can't modify your tag, is it as far as modifying the tag, or is it interfering with the reading of the...
I mean, you can't do anything that interferes with the reading. So it's gotcha. Whether it's modifying or anything like that.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just it's the language is just terrible.
Just completely, yeah, I got you.
And I do want to say that I think it's really easy to learn about all of this technology and just be like, oh, well, it's 1984. It's too late. There's really nothing I can do. And that's completely understandable. You also might think, well, I don't have anything to worry about. And those two things combined, I call those privacy nihilism. Not a fan. And I would strongly recommend that if you're concerned about any of this at all, come talk to me after if you want, or I'll be at the EFF table. But I think it's actually useful to do threat modeling for yourself for physical surveillance technologies, too. This is something we recommend people do for online security and privacy. But it also really makes sense for this sort of thing. So you ask yourself, what do you want to protect? Who do you want to protect it from? How likely is it that you're going to need to? What are the consequences if you fail to? And how much trouble are you willing to go to? And I have handouts that say all this, by the way. And the reason I say this is that you know, sometimes the trouble that you're willing to go to is I'm going to take the train to this demonstration that I'm going to instead of driving because I know there's going
to
be
your car to somebody else.
Well, and that's actually not a bad thing to do. I mean, if you have a friend who's willing to drive your car around for you and you want to seriously and you want to sort of sully the data, you know. But yeah, so these are just good questions to ask yourself because you need to think for yourself individually. What are you concerned about? And believe me, every single person here has a reason they should be concerned. And if you don't think so, come talk to me afterwards and I'll tell you what you have to be concerned about.
Well, one thing we also see is, you know, police departments are really happy to buy this technology, but they're not necessarily so keen about, sorry, I should move this up, so keen about maintaining it, keeping the software updated, making sure that it is reliable by continually testing it and spending money to upgrade it if necessary. It's like, you know, it's a shiny toy that they just think they can rely on, but don't necessarily aren't doing the things that actually keep the technology safe and people safe with it.
Well, if I could throw another comment on that, put yourself in the shoes of law enforcement. They have been, in some cases, sold a bill of goods by the technology companies. This is the solution to all of your problems. Crime will go away if you buy this from us. And so it's very easy to see where police could get that idea. It's not cheap up front, and if it's not made real clear that here's the upfront cost and here's the annual maintenance cost and the upgrade cost and everything else, very quickly they could become disillusioned with it. It doesn't excuse it, but it does explain why some agencies are going to purchase this because of all the promises that were made, and then all of a sudden they have technology that very possibly a lot of people haven't even been trained properly on how to use it and keep the information secure.
And it's much easier to pass regulations for government ALPR. I mean, you can pass a law that says you can't keep the data more than 3 days, pass a law saying that you have to have a public hearing before you buy it. But when it comes to the private use of it, that becomes a lot stickier. I think Utah had placed restrictions on it, and now they're facing a First Amendment lawsuit.
From Vigilant.
From the company. From the company.
Surprise!
And for an organization like us, that's definitely a First Amendment organization, it is a complicated issue for us, because we don't want to see a law in place that says, you know, your average person can't take a picture of a street, or a news crew can't take a picture of a public street because there'll be license plates in the image. So it is a tough balance, and I'm not sure we have a good solution for how to deal with the private collector.
Yeah, that touches a little bit on, I think the distinction there is the quantity, because there are private investigator laws out there where you have to be registered in what they define like private investigating activity is, you know, collecting basically any sort of information that could be like this type of information, but the difference being that it's just done more frequently and in the aggregate, you know, a long time. Like the cell phone taking a picture is not going to fall under that definition in the statute. And so there, you know, there's stuff like that out there that would cover it. So if you're a private citizen running it around using a Stingray without a PI license and selling the data, you're probably going to go to jail or something.
You might be in trouble with the FCC as well.
That's right.
Does someone have the box?
So it seems like that the whole license plate reader thing is like grade school, like we're in the clubhouse. I have an idea. Let's take a picture of everybody's license plate. Oh my God, this would be so great.
That's exactly how it sounded when they were coming up with it.
Yeah. So the third order effects of that being there are multiple police officers that are no longer on the street actually enforcing laws and investigations. You've got technological guys that have to maintain the equipment. You have price incurred for keeping the data. You have to maintain the data. It has to be stored. There's chain of custody issues. All this stuff is wrapped up into the overhead that is incurred as a result of executing this technology throughout a department. Has anybody done the actual stem to stern return on investment that the agencies in specific areas have gotten? I mean, it's got to be its own monkey nightmare, money monkey nightmare that it's got, that's devouring itself financially for departments that are already very strapped for cash. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, it does. I don't know if I've seen any studies, but a lot of that would also require a lot. I think that there's up here. Yeah, there we go. I think that would require a lot of public records and a lot of cooperation from the police. And, you know, watchdogs have not gotten that information. But strangely, Vigilant has all these great press releases about the return on investment. So, I mean, you can ask them and it's probably great, but you know, it's not like anybody else gets to look at the data and make that analysis.
If I could throw in one thing related to this and the private companies, there's one company out there that has a business model. If you own a wrecker service, you've got your own tow truck, they will sell you the camera to put on your tow truck, and they'll make a little bit of money, probably close to break even on that camera. But their business model is you drive around, and as you're driving around wherever you live, your camera is constantly feeding license plate numbers back to the mothership. The mothership's database is growing by literally millions of records per day because they have tow trucks all over the country feeding in the license plate data. In the event there's a hit, meaning Wells Fargo is looking for a car somebody quit making payments on and they can't locate the car, you happen to drive past it, the company will locate or will immediately ping you that you just passed a car on the hot sheet, and if you want to turn around and follow that guy home and pick up that car, you just got some business that you wouldn't have got otherwise. And so you're being paid for a small amount for feeding the mothership with all these license plates, and you've got a shot at some business if you happen past somebody that's on the hot sheet. So that there is all types of methods out there for monetizing people's license plate numbers. Those same companies, that giant database that's growing by millions of records per day, they're selling that information to insurance companies. You have to carry auto insurance. One of the questions is, where are you keeping your car overnight? And if you say, well, I live in this small town that has a very low crime rate, and they quote you rates on that, but it turns out you actually live someplace else, or you spend a significant portion of your time in a neighborhood that has a higher crime rate, the insurance company can get those license plate readings and say, hey, you told me you live over here, but three times last month your car spent the night at this address. What's up? We're raising your rates.
That just reminds me, there's another revenue generator for police. In the city of Tempe, Vigilant Video or Vigilant Solutions gave Tempe a bunch of free cameras with the deal that whenever they had what are called warrant settlements, when somebody gets pinged and they pull over and the person has an outstanding fee, the person can pay right there in the car, swipe their credit card, and Vigilant gets a cut of that credit card payment because they're also providing the card swiping service.
Wow.
Is there any sort of grounds for against the private companies that are gathering this stuff for either lawsuits or criminal cases? Say, like, you're stalking me. You have, you know, collected my information about where I am with this regularity, and that qualifies as stalking. Is there any sort of grounds for that kind of a case?
Private investigator law comes to mind for me. That's the only example I can really think of. I would love to handle class action against someone like that, but that's just me.
I'm not a lawyer, so I tend to avoid questions like that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of constitutional law when it comes to law enforcement is created not through affirmative lawsuits, but through criminal cases. And I think any constitutional decisions we're going to see on these technologies are going to come from cases where defense attorneys are trying to get evidence kept out of court. Depending on what kind of information, not for automated license plate readers, but for biometrics, there are actually two states that have pretty good laws, and you could sue under those if they mishandled your data, and that is Illinois and Texas. But that's it as far as biometrics go and comprehensive laws.
What about if, or rather when, one of these data warehouses gets breached?
If there were another attorney from EFF here, they would be able to answer for you. But I can say, sort of as a general proposition, I mean, look at what happened with the OPM data breach. People are still looking for causes of action and having a hard time. And that is incredibly sensitive data that they were, like, affirmatively entrusted with. We have very, very poor laws in place to force companies to take good care of data. And that is its whole own can of worms. It deserves a whole panel. It's pretty ridiculous how careless companies can be with our private data.
Yeah, in general, though, whenever you have that amount of data, I mean, you run the risk of stuff like that happening. So, I mean, there's a typical just ordinary negligence tort action. There's a Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. There's Electronic Communications Privacy Act. There are state laws that vary, you know, depending on the jurisdiction.
Driver Protection Act as well.
Driver Privacy Protection Act, specific to ALRPs. So, I mean, there are causes of action out there. I'm not sure how an ALRP information would be misused to cause damage to ultimately recover, but, you know, certainly there'd be maybe a class action or something to protect your information from being used. So,
unless you're in San Francisco and you happen to have been pulled over by the police and then forced to kneel for 10 minutes with your bad knees. Yeah. She had a cause of action because there was harm, and that's actually another part of the problem. I mean, you have to, you know, for most of these, the privacy violation, we believe that it is a true harm, but courts kind of see that as hypothetical most of the time.
And when they think of damages, I think more monetary type things usually, but I think there's a harm in that sense as well.
And if the California bill passes, that could change things substantially.
I wanted to follow up on the data protection issue that the gentleman here just brought up. Is that the private companies that are collecting this data, maybe Neustar, for example, is one of them. You know, what are we looking at in the future as far as going beyond the license plate reading? You know, other biometrics being acquired, aggregated, sold to private companies.
Face recognition.
Seems like a big concern.
That's absolutely already happening. Who do you think has the largest facial recognition database? Facebook. It's actually Facebook. If Google Plus had taken off, it might be Google. but I mean, Facebook actually has facial recognition technology that it uses on its platform. So this is definitely a concern. And as I mentioned, when it comes to biometrics, only a couple of states have passed regulations on that. But and then in terms of the, I think you were maybe touching a little bit more on the aggregation. You know, I mean, I'm curious to see in 5 or 6 years how many of these companies continue to be separate companies. They're one of the biggest automated license plate reader companies was purchased by 3M, and 3M has a whole suite of technology that they provide. So I think that you're touching on a point that is going to become increasingly more of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you'd mentioned gate detection. Something else we've seen is automatic vehicle occupancy detection, and right now that's a technology designed with the, you know, mild purpose of making sure people aren't, you know, breaking the rules on the HOV lane. It's just designed to detect a vehicle. Is there more than one person in the vehicle? But once you add, you know, facial recognition to that technology, then you have something that can capture everybody's faces as you're, you know, traveling, walking around, driving around, anything like that. In San Diego, they currently have a mobile face recognition program that they're using to, you know, during stops, and they'll use it on surveillance video or they'll use it on photos. But in their plans, they've clearly stated that the next step would be installing facial recognition cameras on public buses and in public buildings.
Who here has seen the movie Minority Report? Okay.
So it seems like the major concern is the ephemerality of the data being collected and how it's being aggregated, how long it's being kept, under what conditions it's being kept. But what would you say to, like, you've got a hot sheet or you've got a wanted list or you've got an Amber Alert trying to, you know, rescue a kidnapped child? What would be your opinion on using these cameras to do just an instantaneous query and then throw the data away?
I'm less concerned about that. I don't want to talk about, you know, the position of my entire organization about that, because that's something that is, you know, still hypothetical, because we haven't found many places that do, you know, that kind of collection. But it also depends on how they're compiling those hot lists. Are they just driving around a neighborhood and just grabbing people's things and calling it a hot list, or actually these lists of stolen vehicles and car, you know, vehicles that are suspected, like legitimately suspected of being involved in a crime, not just they were in the, you know, one of 200 cars in a neighborhood where a crime once happened 6 months ago.
My position on that, and I think that it's okay to use these ALRPs, but I don't see a need to retain the data. I mean, what's the point? You're driving along as in a police cruiser, and you're scanning, and you get a hit. There, you have the information. If there's no hit, why do you need to hold the data and store it in a database for 30 days? I mean, that's just invasive, in my opinion. But that's my opinion.
If you look at the Indiana bill that was introduced in 2015, it put a 72-hour limit on how long the data could be retained. Again, I'm speaking only for myself. I have no problem with an instantaneous check. When it comes to how long are you going to allow someone to store that data, that's where the real rub comes. The idea behind 72 hours was, if there's been a child abduction, if there's been something else, and you know where that car was immediately before the event occurred, that could be a valuable clue. But when it comes to Colorado allowing 3 years, many states allowing infinity, does it really do you any good to know where that car was 6 years ago? That's pretty worthless data after a while. The data has a very short shelf life for legitimate investigations. And so 72 hours that was proposed in Indiana, to me, I thought that was probably a rational limit. The bill did go through a couple of amendments. The law enforcement in Indiana was lobbying to get it extended. They offered a compromise up to 30 days. But it ultimately died in the end without being passed at all. And just one other thought, the reason that bill was introduced in the first place was there was discussion in Indiana among law enforcement about going out to gun shows and just sucking up all the license plate numbers of people at gun shows, because you never know when you might need that. And one of the legislators decided that it's time to put something on the books to prevent that from happening. So the actual introduction of that bill in Indiana was in response to talk about going out and just vacuuming up information from gun shows.
Wow.
Yeah, and we've seen ALPRs be put outside of, you know, the county fair to capture everybody coming in and looking out for those outstanding warrants and unpaid parking tickets.
Have fun.
Yeah. where's the orange box? There it is.
All right, so for when you want to do a background check on somebody, you can, you know, you can get some of it just through a free website, but you can usually pay for like a premium membership, and you can pull up, you know, it'll query more databases for different data. Is there any future for, you know, now I guess some places have to throw away their data after 72 hours, but as far as other, you know, where data's out there, if you can obtain it, do you think it would ever, you know, be a future with something like, you know, being able to pay a membership, and then you can just view where the police are at on the, you know.
When, as soon as Vigilant runs out of police departments to sell this to, I imagine that's what's going to happen next.
Okay.
They're going to start opening up. Now, I think that they would be probably pretty sensitive to police vehicle data. I think, especially in California and probably elsewhere, privacy of peace officers and judges tend to get a, you know, extraordinary level of protections above everyone else. You know whether that's hiding where they're making their housing purchase records, you know, disappear from the county recorder's office, or you know, any number of things. So I would expect that maybe there would be some rogue ALPR company that's like, yeah, let's find out where all the cops are, but I don't think Vigilant is going to do that.
Well, I tell everyone technology is inherently neutral. There is no good technology or bad technology. It's like a firearm, a hammer, or anything else. It's a tool, and it depends on whose hand is that tool in, whether it's going to be used for good or for bad. I had a conversation with a police chief in Indiana. This has been about 2 years ago. A police chief in Indiana who was talking about a better version of Google Glass. It was for law enforcement only. Sunglasses with a camera built in, and he said, boy, we are right on the brink of an officer being able to walk up to a stopped car, look at the driver, and instantly have a display in his sunglasses saying who that person is. And he was going on about how great that technology is going to be, and I said, that's fine. What are you going to do when one of your undercover agents goes walking into a crack house and the guy's wearing the glasses that says undercover cop?
Exactly.
I have a question about private use of ALPR. And I was just wondering if there were any acceptable uses. And I had an example. So I go through McDonald's drive-thru, and they start pre-preparing the food based on my preferences. Do you think that there's any sort of acceptable use for private businesses?
But, I mean, how do you signal to, in this scenario, how do you signal to McDonald's that this is, you are such a frequent customer that you want to be part of the system and you want them to read your plate and store it?
I guess I'm suggesting that there's some sort of notice that is being done, so I could voluntarily not participate by not going to the drive-thru or something like that. But assuming that everything is kosher, assuming they're not actually storing the license plate, they're storing, you know, some sort of hashed key with salt or something like that. Do you think that there's any sort of acceptable use, like something like that?
I'm not one to opine on McDonald's marketing techniques.
Well, I mean, I'm curious why a license plate reader instead of you could just text them your order. I mean, not that I probably wouldn't do that either. My own privacy concerns there, but I think that there is definitely an impetus to sort of jump at these technologies and think like, oh, they could do all these amazing things. But you know, sometimes like, and I guess texting an order to a company actually would be old fashioned in some ways. But you know, are there any good uses that we don't have less privacy invasive technologies? Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
And if it's a person's or a company's private property, not like a public piece of property, then they can condition your entry onto the property, saying you have to be under our surveillance. I mean, they don't have to, you know, it's not like they're walking down the public street and they have to comply with the normal criminal laws or something. So they could post a sign, and then everybody who goes on our property would choose either eat McDonald's and be surveilled or don't eat McDonald's, which you shouldn't anyways. So
I mean I could see a private parking garage that's unmanned using this. I'm not advocating for this. I'm just saying I could see this as a use that is less objectionable. If they're using, it's an unmanned system, you come in and then you leave, and they're just using that to make sure that the car that comes in is the car that leaves, or that they have some sort of record of it. Now, there would be no reason whatsoever for them to keep that information like any longer than they exactly need to, which would probably be, I don't know, a day, just in case somebody complains that their car was stolen and then they know to go, you know, at what time that happened. But, you know, the private uses on private property, I mean, I'm mainly concerned with the use of private, of this stuff on public roadways. Less so than, you know, if I have it in my garage and I want to know, you know, who's parking in my garage when I'm not home.
I would concur with that. I guess the scenario that I could see is you're a member of a hotel loyalty program. You pull up to valet and their automatic license plate reader tells the valet to greet you as Mr. Fitzgerald. You know, makes you feel good that the valet knows your name. I could see some innocuous uses if you want to participate in something like that. I would agree completely with what David said, that my concern is bulk collection, and if a private company is doing it with your permission, yeah, that's a private transaction between you and them. It's what's being sucked up on the streets that bothers me.
Yeah, it's the permission and the opting in that's really, really key with any kind of collection of personal information.
And so it's kind of a catch-22 as well, because, or puts you between a rock and a hard spot, I guess would be the way to put it, because, like, I've been walking into the Bank of America, and they have these little cameras that point up, and that, like, every single teller, there's a camera. And, like, every single Bank of America branch. So, like, consumers are forced to choose, like, okay, I'm going to have my facial features photographed in detail with a camera 2 feet away from my face every time I go in the branch, or I'm not going to be able to walk to a branch. I'm going to have to do all my banking online. So I think there's a lack of alternatives, and you have to accept, true, it's sort of voluntary in that sense, but not really, because what are the alternatives? All the banks are requiring this or implementing this technology. So I like to see more alternatives. I choose businesses I do business with based on stuff like that, actually. So,
and with that, I want to thank everybody for coming. It's so like heartening to see such a large crowd for an issue like automatic license plate readers. Thank you so much. Yay.